How's it going, guys? It is Wednesday, February 5th. This week on the podcast, Brian Hoffman, CEO of Open Bazaar, joins me as a guest. Open Bazaar is a decentralized marketplace for the buying and selling of goods using crypto. It's a very well-known project that's been around for a long time, and Brian does an awesome job explaining what they're doing and what the long-term goals look like for Open Bazaar. So before we start the episode, make sure you go into the description below and click on the link to make a contribution if you like this episode. It can be small, it can be large, it doesn't matter. Making a contribution helps keep the ads away just a little bit longer and also helps keep the podcast at a high quality level. So with that said, be sure to subscribe if you have not already and share this episode with somebody that you think would like to learn more about Open Bazaar or blockchain. Enjoy.
This is the Block Hash Podcast.
All right, Brian, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Where are you based out of?
Washington, D.C., belly of the beast.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Very cool, very cool. So to start off the podcast, for my audience who are probably familiar with who you are a little bit, but for those that aren't, tell me a little bit about your background and how you kind of got into the crypto space.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I started out as every other bright-eyed, bushy-tailed computer science grad. And since I live in the DC area, you know, tons of people here going to government IT consulting, which is what I did. And I happened to start working with groups that were focused on cybersecurity and encryption technologies and messaging, things like that. And so I ended up working with the Department of Defense and Health and Human Services and different agencies and like classified agencies doing encryption work. And so, you know, it's only a matter of time before, if you're in that field, that you come across cryptocurrencies. And, you know, from there I got the bug. So, you know, and that eventually led to working on open source software and kind of led to Open Bazaar.
Very cool. Have you always been in DC?
Since I was a small kid, yeah, for most of my life. Long enough to be a Redskins fan and regret it.
Think the Redskins will be good next year?
I have a few friends on Twitter that are Redskins, so I don't want to say anything, but I sure hope so. We'll just say I hope so.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. So regarding Open Bazaar, how did that come to be? Like, what was the inspiration or driver to create it?
Yeah, so Open Bazaar spun out of a project or a hackathon project called Dark Market, created by Amir Taki and the guys behind Edge Wallet. And they won the contest in Toronto, and it became pretty public, you know, back in 2014. This is early 2014. So there weren't a lot of like really great use cases for crypto quite yet. You know, I mean, Ethereum hadn't even come on the scene yet, or at least it hadn't materialized yet. So, you know, people were very excited about the idea of like having some kind of decentralized app before the word dApp existed. And this was like the first tangible example of that. So it was really, really cool. And it was only just a few months off of when Silk Road got shut down, which was to that date, you know, I think that was probably the largest kind of like user driven market, you know, place for crypto usage.
So was Bitcoin like the only crypto that used at the time?
It was Bitcoin was the only currency that was supported originally.
So how does it differ from Silk Road or even eBay in terms of how it works?
Well, kind of conceptually, they're all marketplaces, right? You have a merchant, you have a buyer, and then you have some mechanism to find each other and then some way to process that transaction. In the case of eBay, obviously it's eBay that is the middleman. And obviously there's like, you know, a lot of undesirable pieces of that, which is that they can charge whatever they want to do that. You know, if they go down for any reason, their website goes down or they're not available, you can't do anything. There's also the idea around control and the rules. You have to follow the rules and kind of go along with that. And it's not available everywhere. Silk Road kind of took this approach to, you know, really like aggressively go and say, hey, look, now we have cryptocurrency. Let's recreate eBay, but then just, you know, focus on the things that nobody's allowed to do on all these, you know, on Amazon or eBay or Etsy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it ended up kind of going, starting from this like libertarian dream marketplace that allowed everything to really honing in on illegal drugs for the most part. And several other smaller things, right? And I think most people are probably familiar with that. But one of the limitations of what they did was they kind of decentralized the payment processing piece, but everything else was still the exact same model, right? Like you had to go to their central web server, you know, even though it was in the dark net, and they were the middleman, and they got fees for processing transactions, and they handled any kind of disputes you have. So you really only kind of like went part of the way in truly decentralizing that whole marketplace concept. And Open Bazaar flips that all on its end. And I can't say 100% decentralized, because there's obviously a few things that are very difficult to do in a truly decentralized fashion. But it gets very, very, it gets dangerously close to like being completely decentralized and resilient against any of those critiques.
So what allows Open Bazaar to be more decentralized compared to Silk Road, and how that led to like Ross's conviction and everything? Does Open Bazaar work like locally on your computer when you download it? Does it, are there any centralized servers, or is it like, what's the backbone for it?
Well, just like Napster was kind of like a peer-to-peer technology, but still fairly centralized, and they were able to be shut down. We're more like the BitTorrent model. So each computer that like spins up Open Bazaar is actually acting as a independent peer, and they run sort of like a server software in the background that connects to the network directly. It doesn't go through any like, you know, it doesn't go to openbazaar.com and then route out to other people. It goes directly to each individual. So it starts with one or two people connected to it, and then it finds more people and more people, and it keeps building out this network of peers, and then it can kind of communicate with any node on the network through these other computers. So and that goes for even our mobile app Haven. Normally a mobile app would just talk to a central server and then kind of be like a lightweight app on your phone that just talks to other servers. In our case, it actually runs an entire Open Bazaar server on your mobile device, and then it talks directly to other mobile devices and other computers without going through any central servers.
Okay, so Haven is the mobile app for Open Bazaar, right?
Yeah, so Open Bazaar is really just an open protocol. So anybody can build software that runs on top of Open Bazaar and does all these things. Now, it's complicated, so a lot of people don't, but Haven, our mobile app, when I say our, is OB1, my company. We built Haven, which is like a mobile interface on top of Open Bazaar. And so it's interoperable with the desktop software and any other software that people decide to build on it on Open Bazaar, but it's it has a little bit of special sauce that we put in it to do different things on the mobile device. So
what's the benefit of using or creating Haven for Open Bazaar? Is it just more usability or giving the user more options, or is there another plan beyond that?
Yeah, the mobile app. I mean, obviously, you know, in this day and age, like, most people don't want to have to like start, you know, install a desktop application and run that just to go shopping or to like sell something really quickly, like Craigslist style. So, you know, it made sense to try and get on mobile. But there's obviously a lot of differences between the way that you can run and distribute software on the desktop as you can on mobile device. And so knowing that, going into the development of Haven, we recognized that, and we had to make some decisions that made it not quite fully aligned with like the complete 100% open source transparent model. So on desktop, for instance, you know, we have the concept of adding search engines to it. So like, you know, just like BitTorrent, you can go to different indexing services like Pirate Bay if you're looking for movies or whatever, or there's others. And they kind of like monitor the network, and then they curate their website, their view of what's available on the network. And there's others that do a different view. Maybe they only focus on books or whatever. It's the same with Open Bazaar. Like, people can run software, monitor the network, and then create like a search engine And then people are allowed to plug those into their OpenBazaar desktop software. And so, like, for instance, if, you know, I live in China, and I want, like, you know, someone creates a Chinese search engine and only lists Chinese items, maybe I add that because that's convenient for me. And then you can add Obi-Wan search if you want, just like our view of things. On the mobile device, we lock it down to Obi-Wan search because, you know, when we go through the app review process with Apple or Google, the first thing they do is they start looking for things that are not allowed by their guidelines. Say something as simple as vape pens or cigarettes or something like that, right? Things that aren't necessarily illegal, but they aren't allowed in the app stores. So we have to be able to create some kind of level of like filter for users. So it's not just a free for all on the mobile device, whereas on desktop, you have a lot more liberty. So, you know, in our minds, we thought it doesn't really represent the true spirit of what OpenBazaar is supposed to be as an open project. But, you know, we can kind of pull it under the Obi-Wan umbrella and kind of do a better job of articulating the differences between that app and OpenBazaar, even though they run on the same network.
It's very interesting. So I've known of OpenBazaar for a while and I've used it a few times, but it seems like it's very reputation based. Like, I don't see where dispute resolution can ever come into play for the most part. It seems like you really have to trust who your seller is when you buy something.
Yeah, I mean, this is an experiment. I mean, you have to admit that, like, what we're doing is somewhat of an experiment. And so nothing is really perfect or absolute here. But the way that we've got it is there's a couple different trust models that you can take depending on your risk level, right? Like, so there are vendors that are very well known that have stores and people may trust them. Or maybe, like, it's Andreas Antonopoulos' store and he doesn't, you know, you can just pay him directly, just like you would a website. So you pay him money and then you hope he sends the product because you can trust him, or you think you can trust him. So there's this direct model. And then we have moderation model, which is an option. And you could say, hey, I don't know this guy. This is just Joe Schmo on the internet. I want moderation protection. So you choose a moderator, which is like a person who handles disputes. And if for some reason something comes up in the transaction that's not to your liking, you can flag this order for dispute. And then that moderator will kind of come in, who'll step into the process. And just like customer support for eBay or Amazon would do, this person can step in and make a decision or a determination on what needs to happen. And that can be a refund back to the buyer. It could be releasing money to the merchant because the buyer disappeared or something. Or it could just be he doesn't know how to handle the situation, doesn't have enough information. You guys are not giving him enough information, and he has to just split it 50-50 between the two because it just can't be decided. But there is sort of another enhancement that we've made to that, which is, you know, Obi-Wan as a service, we've reached out to a lot of the moderators and we've kind of vetted them, so to speak. We get contact information. We know who they are. We know where to find them. We ask them to be responsive for a certain, you know, within a certain period of time, sort of like eBay kind of requires their staff to do. And we keep them on a list and we continually monitor that. And when they fall out of compliance, we remove them from the list. And they're called verified mods. And it's not completely foolproof. Like, I'm sure somebody can get around it. They can choose to not follow the rules, but at least provides an extra level of reputation on top of the system. That people can choose to use or not choose to use. But generally, when you're using those moderators, you can be assured that at least they were trustworthy at some point and have had successful transactions and people have been pleased with them.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it helps to have those moderators in place. Is there a way to, like, look at reviews or a history of successful sales, like, from a vendor, like, before you go to, like, actually purchase something?
Yeah, so each merchant has like a reviews tab within the within their profiles, and you can look and see what people have rated them. Yeah, so it's kind of a very basic reputation system. It's you know, there's some flaws in it, but you know, we're working on trying to find better ways to improve it. And the cool thing about OpenBazaar being open is that you know, you can kind of monitor the network for the reviews and see how users have, you know, connections to each other. And so things that might not be possible to do within a system like eBay or Yelp, where you you look at the reviews and you're like, how much can I trust this? Because, you know, Yelp can like remove these reviews, or they can fake these reviews or whatever. You know, ours have cryptographic signatures, so you can prove that like this person that reviewed it actually reviewed them. They can't like say, oh, hey, Jimmy gave me 5 stars for this order when he didn't, because they're signed, and you can find out if they're faked or spoofed reviews. So it's kind of just like this like radical transparency for a marketplace.
Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously there's always issues with reviews, and on any platform, you know, someone might be aggrieved and put up a review that isn't quite truthful, or there might not be enough reviews to truly vet someone based on a few transactions. I mean, there's always issues with that for sure.
Yeah. You really, when you're buying stuff online, I mean, I think a lot of people tend to rely on one particular signal as a, you know, a go or no go. And I think you really have to look at things like this, especially in like when you're dealing with anonymous people, you have to look at several different signals. Could be, you know, looking at our Slack or subreddit or whatever, or seeing what people are saying about them online. Because a lot of times, you know, if somebody comes in and tries to scam, or they're not trustworthy, or they don't fulfill their end of the bargain, they get reported very quickly across the community, and it become well known for that behavior. So it is still kind of grassroots in that way, but until we have like a much better reputation system in place, it seems to be working so far.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about the reputation system is if someone is, you know, taking money and not making deliveries, or doing things they shouldn't be doing, or taking advantage of the system, they'll probably get called out very quickly, you know, and they won't get away with it for very long. And in a lot of ways, it incentivizes a vendor to take care of your customer, and it incentivizes a customer in some ways to be good to your vendor. So it works a lot like Uber. Like, I've always kind of thought about that, like your reputation, your score, really does kind of play into like how successful you'll be on whatever platform it is.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of like privacy, is there a degree of anonymity with vendors and with users on the platform, or is it like a user level type of responsibility? Like what goes into that?
So there's a couple different situations. If you use the mobile app, we don't yet support running the app with Tor. On desktop, we do. So if you install, like, let's say a Tor browser on your computer, when you open up OpenBazaar, it will notice that you have that running, and it will ask you if you want to run OpenBazaar through Tor, and it will set that up for you. In the future, we'd like it to just have Tor kind of like bundled with the software at all times, and you can choose to use it. And if it weren't for the fact that the network is kind of slow, to be brief about it, you know, we'd love to enable it on all transactions. But OpenBazaar is pretty conversational. It sends a lot of messages out back and forth, you know, to different people to kind of like flesh out the network. So it's not very like light. And so when you're running it through a kind of a secondary layer like Tor, it gets very slow. It wasn't really constructed for the peer-to-peer model. And so we don't do it by default. But yeah, it's pretty straightforward to get it running. And when you do so, you're hidden behind the Tor network. One caveat to that is that if users are not on Tor, they can't really access your storefront, because you are in the darknet, and then, you know, the buyer would say not be in the darknet, and you can't really cross over those networks. Just like you can't just type in a blah 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 dot onion address in your browser if you're not using Tor. You just won't be able to access it because they're two separate networks. So it gets a little weird. It's still kind of technical, but if you're determined to do so, yeah, it can be very helpful.
Is there like a community chat room per se, or on OpenBazaar, or even off OpenBazaar, where people like talk about this stuff regarding what they see like on the marketplace?
Yeah, so we have a few different communities, and we're trying to consolidate it, but it's kind of every time a new software comes out, people spin up a new community. But we have our main community, and this is probably mostly for like merchants, mods, developers, not so much buyers. We don't see a ton of people that are just like casual users, but our Slack channel, our openbazaar.slack.com, which you can sign up for. that there's a lot of conversation in there about these different things. Like we have a channel for like reputation and for support and all this other stuff. And then we also have a Keybase channel, and we also have, I think we have an IRC channel. So we have a couple different places where people can go, and I think Telegram as well. So, I mean, we're all over the place and we try to monitor those all the time, but it really just depends on what you like to use. We're kind of all over the place.
Are you guys on Discord?
I think we had a Discord, and I believe we shut it down just because it was probably our least well-performing community, and it was getting a lot of spam.
Interesting. So what would you say is the, if you had to pick one, the best platform to go to that's the most active?
It would be Slack for sure. Yeah.
Slack. Okay. In terms of OpenBazaar's future, like, do you see it realistically being able to get as big as an eBay or as an Amazon, or is its future to be kept like much more smaller and niche for like the market that it's kind of providing for right now?
I think a lot of that, I think that question can be very well answered by what happens in the future for crypto. I think, you know, there's been a very tectonic shift over the last few years to go from, you know, this is just digital cash to like now it's these complex financial instruments and it supports DeFi and like there's all these, you know, crazy loaning protocols and all this stuff going on top of it. And I think, you know, this like just using cryptocurrency has kind of like lost its luster a little bit for people. Like they just are inundated with Venmo and all these other options that are just streamlining spending. But I think as crypto grows and starts getting into more people's hands and it starts to scale better where, you know, it can support those kinds of activities, I think something like OpenBazaar, whether it is OpenBazaar or just a derivative or something that comes later, I believe that this crypto commerce kind of software will definitely succeed. So we're trying very hard to like survive long enough to be the one that does that. But, you know, it's, you know, we've been doing this for like 6 years now. And I mean, we thought we'd have 100 million users by now. And I think a lot of people in crypto thought that we'd be even bigger than we are now. And even though it has come so far, I think we were a little bit jaded to think that it was going to be very easy to disrupt, you know, entireties of Amazon and eBay and banking and all these things, right? Like, I mean, they're long-term goals. And I think, you know, a lot of people that have been in the space for a long time have started to become more realistic about that. So, yeah, I mean, we'd love for it to be, to just keep growing and growing and growing. And so that's kind of how we're going on it. But, you know, really it takes like a mental shift. I think if you know, it just the actual usage of crypto becomes more of a driving factor of like what people are doing, then yeah, I think it will start to take off even more.
Yeah, I mean, OpenBazaar is pretty well known in the crypto world, and it feels very tied to the ups and the downs that the crypto market really has and the cycles that it goes through. What kind of future do you see for crypto? Do you think that it's going to start gaining more traction again? Do you think that it's just going to shift away from this idea of cryptocurrency and then we'll just see more like dApps being built? Or where do you see this market going?
I mean, I think that, you know, one of the real tough barriers to entry for dApps, I think, is, you know, if you have a dApp that requires people to actually have a cryptocurrency, you have to create easy ways for them to get the cryptocurrency. And until now, like there's just been a lot, mostly, you know, okay, we'll plug in Coinbase, let's say, and then you have to buy some with your credit card and then you get it. And then you can kind of play in the sandbox with everybody else. I think we have to do a better job of allowing people to like really earn crypto. And you know, that's one of the driving factors of like not having credit card support in OpenBazaar, is that, you know, we could allow people to plug in Stripe or something else. And, you know, maybe that would get more people using it. But then they're going to continually be thinking like, well, I need to get out of crypto, you know, to go do this, or I need to go into crypto to do that. And it's like, we want people to just be thinking natively crypto. And so we want people to earn crypto in Open Bazaar and turn around and spend it on Open Bazaar and like continue to do that, create that virtuous cycle of economic activity. I mean, that's the ideal state. And so we're not as interested in creating something that's just another bridge to the legacy world. You know, like we're trying to like reinvent what's going on here and like change things dramatically, not just a little tiny bit, so that we can carve off 1% profit for ourselves, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And especially in the last few years, there have been a lot of different on-ramps that have been started to get people in and out of crypto much more easily outside of just Coinbase too. And that could be stable coins, that could be earning through something like Lolli or having the option to pay directly on a major retailer site like Amazon in crypto. There's been all kinds of different developments, but I think it'll depend on more so the level of interest people have in using crypto and wanting to use it for that purpose. I don't know, maybe another financial recession will come or something that'll drive people more away from the banks and more into this space again. But it just seems like there's a bit of a lack of interest in it at the moment. But I think that's probably the key here for anyone that's in this space is seeing that interest come back.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see if and when that happens, because, you know, I mean, just for instance, like I got back from San Francisco yesterday and like I was riding in an Uber to the airport and, you know, the guy, he goes, "Oh, what are you here for?" And I said, "I'm here for work." He's like, "What do you do?" I said, "Oh, I work in Bitcoin." And then he just started chuckling and he's like, "Oh yeah, that stuff's dead, man. That's so dead. It's over." And I'm like, "I hope it's not. I have a company based on it." And he's like, "Well, you know, it's just, I don't know. I can't see it ever coming back, you know?" And I was like, "Well, were you ever into crypto?" And he said, "Yeah." He's like, "I actually bought this Uber with the profits from trading crypto when it was like going up." And I was like, "So this guy is like knows enough. He was interested enough to make tens of thousands of dollars, buy a car with it. And then now just because of this recent drop, he's like already disillusioned. He doesn't think it's ever going to come back." So, you know, I'm sure he's not a one-off. I'm sure there's a ton of people that were out there thinking, "Oh, I'm going to get rich off this." You know, and they either lost money or they made money and then that opportunity dried up. But, you know, it's going to take a lot to get people back in. And I would prefer to see people getting in because there's like really cool software opportunities, ways to earn and to explore crypto without having to like have another get rich quick or die trying moment, you know, in the space. So.
Yeah. And I think what's also helping is slowly people are getting away from the idea of, "Oh, you can just buy and sell it and invest in crypto." But nowadays you can invest in terms of, these dApps and what's being built. Like you can get into NFTs and the different ideas of like provenance and supply chain. And you can actually start building stuff realistically that people can use. And I think that'll drive a lot more attention and better attention rather than people just looking for a speculative investment. That in the end might be enough to not only turn around the interest in the market, but hopefully create something a little bit more sustainable.
Yeah. I think from like, from people that are just kind of tech savvy or they like this kind of stuff, you know, the kind of people that read Wired magazine and stuff like that, which there are millions of those people out there. I think that this all makes really good sense to them. And I think that they're willing to try these things and they probably will be dabbling with all this and kind of getting more into it. I think the question that I still have is like, how do we get those dApps and things to a place where anybody can use it and want to use it? You know, like, you know, like it's still, there's still like some hurdles. I mean, like you look at dApps and nifty products like let's say Dapper Labs and stuff. And I mean, even I sometimes, and this is not to pick on them. I mean, they're a fellow portfolio company for our investors, but, and I like what they're doing. I think they're probably one of the best in the space, but this still is still difficult, right? I mean, you look at it and there's jargon, there's weird things that happen that are unexpected. People aren't really sure how to get in and out of those things. Where can I use it? You know, we have the same problems with our software. We get people that get confused because they see it looks approachable. because we've all done good jobs of you know, UI design and like making things look great. But when it comes to the user experience, it's just very hard to paper over all the weird little rough edges of crypto. Mm-hmm. And it's a dual-headed effort. It's not just building like cool clients that people can play with, but also the underlying technology has to be streamlined and like really work well, because everything that's built on top of it is going to rely on that.
Yeah. And I also think there's a lack of like education in the space and education in terms of getting coders and students that want to get into coding interested in blockchain. I think LinkedIn came out like a couple weeks ago and said blockchain is like the number one job going into 2020 or something like that. Number one job in demand. And that's probably for good reason too, because there's probably just not enough ways for people to learn how to build on blockchain. And I imagine that that's a huge hurdle to overcome if you're trying to build anything in this space, trying to find someone that not only understands the vision of what you're trying to do, but also knows how to build something in that sense.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, and you know, our company it's not that big, but you know, we our first few critical hires at the company were just people that had worked on the project for open source, contributed, and really understood what we were doing and liked it, and it made sense to bring them on board. And then we started to kind of branch out from there and hire people that weren't really even in the crypto space, but were just like IT specialists or whatever. And it's interesting to see, you know, they kind of come in with a kind of skeptical eye, but being optimistic, and then they learn more and they get really excited. And then they kind of like hit this inflection point where they understand what the power could be, but then they start learning limitations. And then the tough part comes where you're trying to push through that. You're trying to really come up with the breakthrough that is going to simplify things, make things better, make people want to use this. And that's the challenge that we're at with a lot of these projects. You know, we went through 2017 where people just came up with an idea and like, oh, I'm going to blockchain, you know, movie scripts. It's like, or produce or whatever it is. And, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, that, I guess that could work, you know, and we throw a bunch of money at it. And then 2 years goes by and then they're like, either it's not going to work or you get stuck, because you have to find, you know, where is this really helping people? Is this just like a BS idea that you didn't really think through, or is this actually something that's useful to humanity? So, you know, that it's just, that's where a lot of this mockery around the ICO space comes, is just that people know that, you know, we learned this with the dot-com bubble, that it's just like, not every idea is equal, in execution means everything. So, you know, I'm hoping in the next year or two, we really start to see people like pushing through that wall of difficulty. It's not going to be easy, and not everybody's going to make it. But I think the things that come out on the other side, all these blockchain engineers are starting to go and work on, will happen. I think it's really important.
Oh yeah, very important. And it's almost funny we talk about for the good of humanity when there's projects and dApps out there like CryptoKitties, for example, that really doesn't serve any useful purpose for humanity. But I mean, it has driven a lot of attention into the idea of what you can do with this stuff. Like, what is an NFT? Like, can you actually create some type of virtual value per sense?
I can't necessarily vouch for the long-term value of CryptoKitties specifically, but anybody who's talking in jest about the concept of nifties or crypto gaming or anything as being like trivial and not really meaningful to humanity is kind of off. It's out of place, because you look at things like, you know, just from a business perspective, you look at marketplaces like Fortnite. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their own virtual currency. They have digital assets, and they sell, what, $300 million worth of it every single month. That's like a small economy on its own. And they're just selling digital goods within their own ecosystem. Now expand that to across multiple blockchains, different projects, different use cases. I mean, there's just a massive potential, and a lot of people, you know, it's entertainment is not something to sneeze at. People need entertainment. They need things beyond just financial instruments, right? And so, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I mean, it's up to these companies and projects to really like take it to that next level. But and maybe some of these are just trivial examples, but you know, there were like little tiny betting apps on Bitcoin that people started building that we just thought, oh, they're just like crappy gambling sites or whatever. But you know, out of that grows large, you know, basically, you know, a lot of these financial exchanges and stuff are basically doing gambling. I mean, you're making bets on different things, right? And so, you know, that use case has to grow from a simple case to something more expansive. And I think a lot of the nifty use case and things like that, you know, are going to expand into more meaningful and more important things over time, for sure.
Yeah, it's more so about the innovation of it too. I mean, because you got to start from somewhere with a lot of this stuff. And what they've done in a lot of ways to kind of push the envelope in terms of development and all these new ideas and the things that you can do with it and you could do with it that they are doing. I think that's the most important part of it.
For sure.
Before we go ahead and wrap up, is there anything that the audience should be aware of regarding what you guys are doing with Open Bazaar, or is there anything that you're doing outside of Open Bazaar that you want people to know about? I'll go ahead and leave it open to you.
You know, I mean, basically we're really just, I mean, I'm assuming that your audience is fairly technical. I mean, cause you're doing blockchain fairly, stuff, yeah. But, you know, but we're trying to get as many people using the platform as possible. So if you go to openbazaar.com, you don't even have to download or install anything. You can see what the marketplace looks like, what's available, who's on it, and get a taste of that. And if you really want to, go ahead and download our mobile app Haven on the iOS and Android store or Google Play store. And I mean, there's no registration involved. There's nothing, you know, your information is always private. It's on your own device, and you can get started. You get a wallet. You can buy, sell, do whatever you want on there, and try it out. So we'd love anybody who's listening to do that. Really appreciate it. And you can follow us on Twitter at Open Bazaar. It's pretty easy. You can follow me at Brian C. Hoffman. And if you have questions or you like what you hear, you can join us in our Slack community, openbazaar.slack.com.
Sweet. I'll put a whole bunch of links in the description below as well. Brian, thank you for taking the time to come on and everything. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you're a busy guy, but I mean, I'm also sure a lot of people in my audience will appreciate hearing more about what you guys are doing with Open Bazaar and what you see for it in the future. And yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate each and every one of these things. I love talking to people. So you never know when you cross back paths with anybody you've spoken to. So right. I love it. So thanks.
Yeah, welcome. Talk to you again soon.